Modern Databases with Ryan Booz.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host, with helping you and your teams move fast and deliver quality and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and highly effective, and it uses its ClearMeasure way for effective software teams methodology. Also, my architect forums are going strong. Signups for the next sessions are up. And if you lead a software team and are looking to collaborate with peer architect leaders, then just sign up at the link in the show notes. And for those who are looking for the Programming with Palermo video podcast, just search in any of the podcast directories or on YouTube and you'll be able to find it. My guest today on the show is Ryan Booz, and he's an advocate at Redgate focusing on PostgreSQL. He's been working as a PostgreSQL advocate and developer, DBA, and product manager for more than 20 years, primarily working with time series data on Postgres and the Microsoft Data Platform. He's a longtime DBA, starting with MySQL and Postgres in the late 90s. He spent more than 15 years working with SQL Server before returning to PostgreSQL full-time in 2018. And he's at the top of his game right now when he's learning something new about the data platform or teaching others about the technology he loves. Ryan, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm doing well today. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. This is, tell you what, it's Monday right now as we're recording, but it's the best Monday I've had this week.
It's great. Yeah, I actually woke up. We are, as you have probably heard, with Redgate in the past community, SQL Server has for many years had the Professional Association of SQL Server, and Redgate now helps run that. So our conference is in November, and I woke up to tomorrow. I'm helping to do some Postgres content for that, and I've been waiting on a couple of confirmations. I woke up on a Monday morning to people saying that they're agreeing. So that was a good way to start my week, and looking forward to the rest of it.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I want to get into databases, and you're the man to talk to about that. But before we do, you know, over 20 years, you've been working with this stuff, but back us up. What are some of the memorable moments in your career that kind of led you to focusing on databases, and particularly what you find yourself focusing on now?
Oh, man, that's a great question. A lot happens over 20 plus years, right? As we live and grow. To be honest, my background, I'm not going to go too far back, but I went into college thinking I was going to do computer engineering. And through a number of reasons that didn't end up, I ended up getting my degree in music education, actually, my undergrad. Because of that, I ended up in a place, but I never gave up computers. And I ended up in a place where I could do both music and computers and teach. And I've just always loved teaching. And that got me into Penn State after I left the private school for a few years and began teaching at Penn State, doing computers, technology, and so forth. And in that, I've always been drawn to databases. I was always drawn to helping somebody do something with their data, creating applications as PHP and other things came around. I was just reminiscing the other day. I was the first person on Penn State's campus. I was begging to make an app for my team, and they just didn't have a database to use yet. So I actually was the first person to use PHP and DB2 together because that's the only things they had available. Because I wanted to help make that stuff happen. So really out of Penn State, I went into a private local company. It was an energy company called EnergyCap. We were doing utility bill management. And so I had just started to use Postgres at Penn State for this project and then had this opportunity. So I spent 15 years working with .NET, Microsoft products, SQL Server, Power BI. And I left that company after 15 years thinking I was going to another real-time analytics company. I was going to help them with their big data problem in SQL Server and this data platform. And they forgot to tell me that in the time I had signed the contract and landed in the office, they were moving away from Microsoft.
Oh,
not from .NET. but from SQL Server. So I landed on the ground. I went to connect the first day and I said, wait, this isn't SQL Server. What are you doing? Oh, we forgot to tell you that we're moving to Postgres. And so I took the opportunity. It wasn't always easy, but I've been now for 5.5 years full-time doing Postgres work. I've been an advocate for 2.5 years now. I worked for a company called Timescale before Redgate, which is a Postgres-based database for time series data. Mm-hmm. And I've been at Redgate now for about 7 months. And probably like a lot of your listeners, I've known of and used Redgate products for many years. Again, I spent 15 years with Microsoft, the whole data platform. And I could tell that I could start to tell they were talking more about Postgres and other databases. And so I reached out and said, hey, is there a chance that you're looking for someone to help? Because I love what you are about. I love how you've really helped the community. And I'd love to see more of that spirit come to the Postgres open source community in the database world.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm here, having a great time.
Well, Redgate, yes, phenomenal company with database tools. I want to ask you more about that as we go along.
Yeah.
I want to get your sense for just databases in the industry, because I remember when you basically had to pick a database and that kind of separated you from a whole grouping of other technologies. And now with Azure and even AWS basically being friendly and hosting so many database platforms, what are the choices in the database world? Do you pick one and then are locked in, or are people just mixing and matching more than ever? How has that changed over, say, the last decade or so?
Yeah, I think the last decade has seen a really interesting shift. So what I've seen and the reason I've been drawn to a number of these databases over the last couple of years is, you know, up until maybe, you know, 2000, 2010, we were relational only. We tried to get everything done in relational.
Yeah.
And we were struggling particularly with things like time series, right? High frequency, high update. It just, relational databases, the mechanisms that were, you know, driving how that data is stored, the transactional nature of it, it just was hard to keep up. We hadn't quite caught up to the need, and the birth of NoSQL really, really came to fruition, you know, around about 2010. And there's a lot of value in NoSQL. There's a lot of good things that happened there, but I think what most people, and this is what I experienced over the last 5 to 8 years as well, it's we could get lots of data in NoSQL, but we're still missing that rich relational nature, which makes sense. That's the whole point of NoSQL, right? And so I think that the technology has caught up, that so many of these databases, whether it's SQL Server, whether it's Postgres, others, they are catching up to the technology and able to really support a lot of those workloads in ways they weren't able to 10, 15 years ago. And now they become a really viable option to maintain that integrity and move forward. So the differentiator now becomes, you know, some of it's licensing, some of it is just pure technology. The interoperability has become really interesting. You know, when you have something like Azure that is very native SQL Server and Synapse and, you know, these kind of big data lake systems, but really easily you can spin up a Postgres database with a foreign data wrapper and query that data in a matter of minutes. That wasn't possible many years ago. So I think that's where people are trying to find that relationship between, you know, where does this work at a licensing level? You know, what are the skills or the features within each database that help us leverage, particularly in microservice architecture, the pieces of our application that are really going to serve well? And it's just so much easier than it used to be.
Okay. Well, good. Well, speaking of features, what are some features of Postgres that really intrigue you that maybe, you know, again, are the number of developers in the world has doubled over the last 7 years and whatnot. So there's lots of people who started with one database and might not have had experience with multiple. So for Postgres, are there differentiating features where, oh, it's just really good at this compared to the other ones?
So the couple features that are really exciting about Postgres to me are, you know, things that once you understand the context and how they can really bring value, I think a lot of people, their eyes open up, you know, oh, this is what I can do with this thing. The first one is extensibility. So Postgres has been developed for 15 years, maybe a little bit more, in a way that anybody can write an extension that can take advantage of many parts of the architecture. If you want to write an extension that modifies the way a query plan is written for something you've done, you can do that. If you want to modify how your data is stored on disk, you can create an extension to do that. You can get access to those hooks within the code base. And so many things that you might not be able to do out of the box, like, hey, do you want a new index type for your specific data type? Go for it. You can write an extension. You can create a whole nother way to index that data that can then be used within the query plans. You can't get that in SQL Server. You can't get that in MySQL. Right. You can't get that, right? So there's just this wealth of opportunity. And so now we have, and so people that have taken advantage are Azure. So, right, the Azure Cosmos DB for Postgres is built on top of this extension, not part of core Postgres. They don't have to modify Postgres core. Mm-hmm. They simply add this extension called Citus. And now you get horizontally scalable query any node Postgres. And it's just an extension. You get something like Timescale DB, who I used to work for, and they take the partitioning to an automated level. So you can ingest millions of rows of time series data a second, and partitions are just created on the fly as you go, natural columnar compression. Again, things that Postgres doesn't offer, but you don't have to change Postgres.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting. And so I think that's the first one.
Is there a marketplace of these extensions then how big is it?
Oh man, it's huge. We say huge. We're probably up to unofficially, thousands. Officially, there are, and they can do everything. I mean, there's just really cool things. As a former SQL Server developer, there's things like foreign data wrappers. So again, in the SQL Server space, they have been incorporated over the years into SQL Server. We don't call them foreign data wrappers. Mm-hmm. I actually forget right now what we call them, but basically making a foreign table on a different data source.
Okay.
Foreign data wrappers, anyone can, if you have a new file type and you want to create a foreign data wrapper, go for it. And now you have a foreign data wrapper for that. So the interesting things are, we have an extension network called PGXN. And so it's the Postgres extension network. And so you can basically, it kind of works like the Perl package network. So you can install that in your server, install an extension, get ready to use it. And nice. So that's what it's. So there's probably 400 or 500 officially in the PGXN right now.
Okay.
But I know there are more than that officially. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And another feature that you were really excited about that makes Postgres unique?
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
Yeah, the other feature that's really interesting, exciting to me because it has helped the community a lot lately, it really honestly does come down to the licensing of it. Because it's one of the simplest, it's actually pointed to often in the open source community as one of the simplest and most liberal licenses that has existed in the open source community. Mm-hmm. It's 127 lines long, and that's it, like lines, oh, not okay. sentences, lines right. long. And it simply says, do whatever you want as long as you include this, right? Fork it and do it. And so because of that liberal nature of that license, it's become the standard for connectivity to a relational database. Almost every tool you use, if you pay attention, most of them, they don't say compatible with T-SQL, compatible with SQL Server. It says Postgres compatible, right? Whether it's your query tool, whether it's your data tool, your reporting tool, it's become the thing. And it doesn't mean it stands alone and above. Again, it's open source. There's nothing proprietary about what it's doing. The community that develops this has focused very heavily over these decades now of holding to the SQL standard. Mm. So it makes sense that it would become the thing that, if it works in Postgres, it's probably going to work in other places. And so we want to be Postgres compatible. And because of that license, then you have Azure Cosmos, DB for Postgres and Azure Postgres, I forget what they call it. And you have AlloyDB and you have AWS's version and you have Ivan's version. It's just, you go down the list. It's become a way to really expand the offer of relational data and expand the community and the opportunity for Postgres. Okay. And all of those companies, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and a few others, they've really invested very heavily over the last 3 to 4 years into the open source code base. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer just them taking, they are actually really helping in some very serious ways to make Postgres a lot better. And so it's all, again, all because they can, because that license exists. So,
yeah. And Microsoft wants everybody to run everything on Azure. So they don't really, they used to be buy our SQL Server license. And now it's like, hey, Postgres on Azure. Okay. You're still paying us. We're happy.
I mean, that's how everyone is, right? And if it solves your technical need, why not, right? It is the ultimate. Maybe that's the last point I would say. It's funny you just said that. It's like the ultimate in data portability. There's almost nothing that anyone can do to keep you from taking your data to another, because they're all Postgres, right? It's Postgres core. Maybe they've redone the storage layer. I can dump my data and do a PG restore and off I go. I don't have to worry about licensing costs and those things. So it's pretty cool.
Is there any environment or platform where Postgres can't run? And I'm thinking, you know, obviously, you know, the cloud, they can host it for us and servers, but even on the small scale and IoT devices, is there a boundary that it doesn't run on or doesn't run on yet?
Oh, really great question. My gut answer is to say there's nowhere it can't run, but I think there's some places where, you know, there's been some really good examples of, you know, running Postgres on little Pi 4s and doing all kinds of things, making Kubernetes clusters to run stuff. There are a couple of companies, a brand new one called PG Edge, just announced in the last maybe 6 weeks, kind of their official release, their official, I think, Series A or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And that's really their goal, is to have an edge-based option for Postgres that can easily replicate to a central server in a very high connectivity IoT device kind of environment. One of the gentlemen behind that has been doing, actually, I think wrote the first version of Postgres replication back at 1998 or something. And I talked to him in San Jose last week at a conference, and he said, it feels like I'm finally coming home. Like my retirement is coming home to do this at a scale that I had always hoped we could do something with. So
nice.
Yeah, I can't, there's not many places I can't, not many places that I can't imagine it doesn't run. I'll put it that way.
Well, there's been some discussions in the WebAssembly space and on the Maui team about just the options for caching. And in the question, can we use a downsized database engine so that, let's say, the ORM entity framework can just use the same mappings to maybe cache a few records of a certain table locally on a smartphone or IoT device, and not have to store it in a different format or in a different way just because it's over the wire away from the server.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen, there's been a little bit of that discussion lately. And some of that comes down to the conversation I've seen it with some folks is just, that is still one of the really good uses for, now my brain just lost it.
It's all right.
What's the local database there?
SQLite?
Thank you, SQLite. And there's actually been some updates to some foreign data wrappers of SQLite and some of those things. I have not looked at the architecture of PG Edge to see what they're doing and if that might at some point be an opportunity.
Okay. All right. So there's not yet a known Progress SQL for iOS or Android or MAUI and smartphones?
No, that's a good point. That's one thing I have not seen yet.
Correct. Okay. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
So it seems like
I'm sure there's a challenge there and someone's going to take you up on the challenge.
They're going to say, yeah, it's been around for 10 years. Just nobody knows
exactly.
About it. The marketing hasn't been done yet.
Yeah, there you go.
So with so much going on in the database space, it seems like Postgres is the database platform that's just being built on, because SQL Server never created that marketplace. SQL Server was, you know, we don't accept pull requests. It is from Microsoft and you can either use it in the forms we give you or not use it. Whereas that's a totally different mindset. And wow, am I thinking about it in the right way?
You are thinking about it in the right way. I think that the change has been this. So just a really quick architecture kind of background in the world. The most well-known Postgres fork that people probably don't realize is a Postgres fork is Redshift. So Amazon Redshift has really big business for Amazon. It's a, you know, multi-parallel processing, data warehousing. Mm-hmm. That was built on Postgres 8.1 or 8.2. Again, that permissive license. They said, well, we don't have to write the SQL engine. And we don't have to write the initial storage layer. So let's just take this and fork it and do what we want. The problem is, because they weren't contributing back, Redshift has actually drifted so far away from Postgres. You know, what the things you can now do in Postgres, the SQL you can write. So everyone has realized some of those problems. And so earlier versions, in fact, Citus, which is what Microsoft purchased to make Cosmos DB, they used to be a fork of Postgres.
But and they realized so far.
Keeping that up was so hard. They spent a year and a half, literally what we would call deforking, taking all of that code base, make it an extension. Mm. So now they could just take core Postgres, load the extension, and just, you know, every release, they might have to fix something, but it was much easier to maintain.
Yeah.
That's what makes it a platform. And so some interesting use cases, Amazon, when you connect to Aurora, what you get is pure Postgres. Everything under the covers has been rewritten, and they take advantage of the storage hooks and architecture. So you're connecting to using Postgres, 99% of what you should be able to do will work. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Azure Cosmos for DB, for Postgres, or whatever it's called. I forget exactly what it's called.
Yeah.
Same deal. 90 plus 95% of what you get is essentially pure Postgres. They've simply rewritten the storage layer to work within their Cosmos DB framework.
Okay.
That's really powerful.
Right? Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's what everyone's finally seeing.
Well, and with just all the different .NET applications that would talk to a SQL database, with the latest Entity Framework is really good. And there used to be conversations about, oh, we use this ORM or InHibernate or this or that, because Entity Framework did some things. It's gotten really, really good now. And just
it's good to hear.
so many of the basic scenarios. So from a local developer workstation and private build and integration build, you know, with SQL Server, you have SQL Express, you have SQL Local DB. What's the flavor or what's the style of PostgreSQL that supports those parts of the process when you just say you want to spin up the schema real quick, throw some records at it, run some tests, and then throw it away? Are there different flavors, or do you spin it up a different way? How does that look?
Really good question. I think what most people tend to do, depending on where you're hosted and what you're doing, Docker's containerization and Postgres has been on the forefront of how all of these services are being run. You know, SQL Server, some others, it's taken a little bit longer to say, yes, Kubernetes all the way, we can spin up pods and down and have persistent storage. That's taken a little bit longer, I think, on that side of the equation. But it's been very much, I could probably name, if I took a minute, 7 or 8 very active operators that are being developed by various companies to make Postgres really usable within the container space. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Docker's the easiest way to do that. That's how most people, probably have 4 or 5 versions running at any time. And with the Docker file, it's really easy. Again, talking about that PGXN, it's very easy to replicate even something like Citus. You know, I can, if they don't have an image or they're not supporting something specific, I can spin up a container, make sure that those extensions are installed and initiated in my database. And then I'm fairly certain, I mean, just the nature of what these are, I have what I'm using there because it's the same version of Postgres. It's the same extension version. Mm-hmm. It's installed the same way, and I can spin up and get running and test. And upgrades are a thing, right? So when I, again, coming from Timescale, they might release a new version of the extension every month. And so I need to make sure that I have a process for spinning up, backing up, restoring, testing, and moving forward.
That's a good point. With this network, instead of just having, oh, SQL Server 19 or 22 or whatever version you're on, and you spin it up and use those features, and all you're worrying about is really the schema. Okay, do we have the tables, the views, the stored procedures, and whatnot? Now we have another package manager. Okay, now I need the database. Oh, but wait a minute. I need it initialized with these extensions because it does me no good to run tests against a database that doesn't have the right configuration of extensions, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of the things that has been really interesting coming to Redgate is that, you know, understanding that over the last few years, because it's so, these things are changing all the time. You know, new features, bug fixes, things are happening. And it's at a cadence I was never used to in SQL Server. If I'm looking for, you know, yes, we get monthly patches and so forth. But if a new feature is released, what is that, every 2 to 3 years?
Yeah,
most of the time? Right. It's stable, but it's also, it's a new thing to get used to. And so that's, you know, again, when I came to Redgate, one of the things that I've always really enjoyed and appreciated about the development process at my previous companies was that idea of how do I maintain the schema? My experience with Entity Framework stopped a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was still pretty challenging to really keep that up. And I love the idea of state-based tools, very easy to do within SQL Server and SSDT and some of those things. And then we had Redgate. You know, we were really good about maintaining our models, having tools that would allow us to, you know, see the changes that were being made, make sure things were synchronized between schemas and so forth. There wasn't anything like that in Postgres. Now, again, it's open source. There's a few things here and there that, again, it's open. People are doing all kinds of things, but a company wasn't. I actually didn't understand the extent to which Redgate had gotten in transitioning all their tools from SQL Server to work in other databases like Postgres. So it was actually really fun to land on the ground, start with the company and realize, oh, Flyway, which is our you know, our new migration framework for many, many databases, now supports things like schema management, migration, you know, generating migrations for you, checking scripts, you know, for compatibility, all those kinds of things across SQL Server, Postgres, Oracle, soon MySQL, right? So all of those things are happening in tooling that just becomes fun to kind of play in each of those little spaces and see that happen.
Nice. So transitioning to that, you mentioned Flyway, and with the few minutes we have left, Redgate's expanded into so many tools. What is the state of the modern Redgate tools? There's so many tools, but you could say some of them are been around for so long. But really, if you could name, this is the modern set of Redgate tools that if you don't have anything already entrenched somewhere, and if you're just adopting, here's like the top three that you need to reach for first.
Yeah, for sure, without a doubt. As a developer in DBA, if you've had that experience, particularly of not understanding what your golden schema is, how to really know that your production database or databases actually match what you intend and someone hasn't changed something. Managing that whole process really easily is what Flyway is all about. So Flyway was an open source tool that was migration based only. Redgate bought that 4 years ago and has incorporated into Flyway what most people have used Redgate for years in the SQL Server space with SQL Compare and SQL Data Compare and SQL Change Automation. All of those things are wrapped up in a Flyway. In process, some of those things are still coming, but a lot of that work has already been done. And so you get one desktop application. So it's a desktop portion, which is really nice. A command line that you can integrate into your pipelines, wherever you are, Azure DevOps or GitHub Actions, whatever that is. And you can seamlessly manage your transitions, from your migrations from initial development, generating the scripts, things like drift reports and making sure that all of your rule sets for your SQL comply. Right? Something as simple as, are all of our views named like this, right? Easily do that Flyway in rule sets. And so those kinds of things. So that's number one. So using Flyway for that whole management process is just easy and awesome. And then obviously SQL Monitor. SQL Monitor has been around a long time. It's probably one of the first tools I used with Redgate I was running a SaaS operation with a couple thousand databases. And it's just nothing like it. The focus of SQL Monitor, which for me in the Postgres space has been unique because I forgot about it. Mm. I used SQL Monitor for a long time, been away for 5 years, and I'm so used to seeing a Grafana dashboard with graphs. And SQL Monitor starts from the premise of, you know, we're going to help you set up and monitor what's right, but your first view is what is the current state and what do you need to be alerted on first? So let's assume things are working well as long as it's set up correctly and we'll help you make sure that happens. Mm-hmm. And then you are drawn into exactly where the issues are and why you need to do that. Then you get to the charts and graphs and all the other stuff. They've done an excellent job rolling in Postgres as a supported database into SQL Monitor. They're now working on Oracle and they're working on MySQL. And just really, again, things are unique and specific to the different databases. Yes, connectivity matters everywhere. But in Postgres, something like the vacuum process is really, really important. And if your tool doesn't monitor that correctly, you're kind of, you're flying blind, as it were. And so that would be number two. And number three, they're really working hard on some of those side tools that everyone used to use were wrapping into what we call test data management. Mm. So things like data masking, instant cloning of databases, ways to really help that developer pipeline. How do I quickly spin up something that looks really similar to prod? Not something that's like, fake data, who cares? Mm-hmm. What looks really similar to prod so I can make sure that both my changes and the application work as I expect before we take to the next step. And so that whole suite of products is really coming to life. We just announced SQL Clone last week at DevOps in London, DevOps Days or DevOps Con, or I forget exactly what it was. But so really fun stuff. And honestly, as we look forward to PASS, I mentioned PASS at the beginning of this. Mm-hmm. So PASS is an annual summit, typically in Seattle, for the SQL Server space. It's really expanding beyond SQL Server. We're going to have some Postgres content this year, some really good stuff. I'm excited about it. And looking forward to that, and what we'll be able to talk about there as well is exciting for me. So
nice. Well, Ryan, we could go on for another whole episode.
Love talking databases. This right. is fun stuff.
Exactly. And we'll include your links in the show notes, and you have a blog, and you keep up with full form blogging when so many people have gone to short posts, right?
It's, as you can tell, I can talk pretty easily. I love explaining what it's like. I've been through that journey.
Yep.
I'd rather help you understand it now than a little bit like, let's get it done.
Well, I enjoyed your latest post on MVCC and the different locking mechanisms that you can choose besides, like, there's more locking mechanisms, as I understand it, in Postgres than there are in SQL Server. Do I have that right?
There's just a different way that it works. It's kind of half right. It's the way that it works is just different from SQL Server, and it was chosen for a reason. It actually has some, for instance, if you don't enable MVCC by default in SQL Server, which nowadays I think it technically is by default, but you used to have to, even up to like 2012, 2016, you had to physically enable it. And so we were always taught things like don't select too many rows because then you're going to take a page lock or a table lock, and that's going to mess up with your selects. And Postgres from day one has always been readers don't block writers and writers don't block readers. And nice. It can create some problems if you don't know about it. And that's what I'm starting to try and work through. And it's becoming it's a thing, right? You have to know about it. And the more you know, the better it can be.
Yeah. Awesome. We'll include all those links to your blog and your websites in the show notes. And thanks so much for coming on the Azure DevOps podcast and sharing with us what's going on in the modern age with databases.
There's a lot happening. It's fun to talk about. Thank you so much for having me, Jeffrey. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure indeed. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.